Hey everybody, it's Brian. Before I did this Seahawks stuff full-time, I worked as a manager and senior leader, so I know how lonely it can be to try to find someone you trust to talk through people issues, org issues, process issues as you try to lead an organization. Ryan Cleveland of RyanCleveland.com is someone I trust to have those conversations with. He specializes in working with CEOs and business owners, and you can get a complimentary free discovery session to see if it's a good fit for you. Just go to RyanCleveland.com to sign up and start now. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at HawkBlogger. And tonight, Wednesday evening of the bye week of the 4-5 Seahawks, losers of four straight at home, losers of 5 out of 6, who could think of anything better to do than to talk about this juggernaut known as your 2024 Seahawks? I found two guys willing to have this conversation with me. The great Nathan Ernst at NathanE11 and Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons. Nathan, man, how are you doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
Hanging in there, kind of ready to talk some Seahawks and kind of mix it up a little bit. So that'll be nice. How about you? How are you doing, Brian?
You know, I'm doing all right. I've been eating really poorly and not exercising. And so I'm kind of deciding this bye week is a transition for me, too. I'm ready to get back on the program, start eating a little bit better. I'm really going out with a bang, though. I got like a little coconut cream pie in the house. We got a little bit of like zucchini bread. We've got some Haagen-Dazs. So tonight's a little bit, you know, it's a comfort food kind of evening, and then we'll turn things around tomorrow. Jeff, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm all right. A little different out here in Canada than what you guys going through over. Don't admit that, but yeah. I'm a little jealous of what you've been eating lately. I've been trying to like watch what I've been eating and trying to kind of get a little healthier and feel better. But I just have like fat instincts everywhere. So like it's hard for me, man.
That is my normal place is just eating massive amounts of sugar, like sugar and carbs is my normal place. And so I can go for many months at a time. Sometimes I've gone years at a time doing well, but I always end up right back off the wagon. So it's, you know, I don't think I'd want to go my whole life without eating sugar, but I certainly am better off when I'm not doing it.
See, sugar is not my thing. I can avoid candy and all that kind of stuff, but if you put tortilla chips in front of me, it's impossible. Salty stuff like that, can't resist.
Yeah, it's funny, the savory sweet thing. Everyone's got their thing. So I'm sure somewhere, what do you think Mike McDonald's thing is? Do you think like during this bye week where they're crunching all this film with the coaches, is he eating like protein chips or something? Is he like, does he have like Sour Patch Kids? Like, what's his thing?
He strikes me as the kind of guy that's like, looks up at 7 o'clock at night and is like, oh no, I forgot to eat today. and if Evan was here, I mean, I'm sure he's probably, if he's doing anything, he's pounding like some kind of protein bar or something like that all day long.
Jeff, do you have a feel for this? I mean, what do you think's going on over there in the VMAC this week?
I feel like McDonald's one of those guys that like really likes almonds and is like convinced that like almonds are amazing. You know, those guys that are like, they don't eat snacks. They just eat almonds all the time. And like, they kind of make you feel guilty about what you eat. He kind of seems like one of those dudes.
I think that's a pretty good call. I could see that. Maybe his guilty pleasure is those like skinny dipped, like chocolate covered almonds, you know? Yeah. And feels like he's real bad boy.
He eats one yogurt covered walnut or almond or something. And that's indulgent.
If you guys had in front of you like a bowl full of yogurt covered almonds and a bowl full of chocolate covered almonds, which are you going for?
Yogurt, for sure.
Jeff?
Chocolate.
Yeah, I think that's a tough call. I think I'd probably yogurt. I think
they're both very good.
Yeah, I think that.
See, now maybe I take it back. Like chocolate covered almonds, maybe better than yogurt covered almonds, but if it's like, if there's yogurt covered raisins.
They blow that one out of the water.
I think that's a good call. Any kind of chocolate covered pretzel is a real weakness for me. The salty sweet just is too good. Well, I mean, we do know that those coaches are over there this week. While the players are away, the coaches will play. And they are, the phrase was, everything's on the table. That is what Mike McDonald said. And I want to know, what do you guys think that might mean? He doesn't say that meaning that we're just going to go back and figure out some new scheme stuff, or we're going to make, like, everything's on the table seems meaningful. Jeff, what comes to mind for you? Like, maybe give me two answers. Give me what you hope that means, and then give me what you think he means.
What I hope that means is they have some meaningful change that they're working on. Maybe that's like a personnel change on the offensive line. Maybe that's moving people to different positions on the offensive line. Maybe that's a player change. What I think he means is that of the three groups they have, offensive, defensive, special teams, no one's performing well consistently. It's been up and down, and they've looked completely out of control at times. And I think it's at the table where it's like, there's no part of the team you can say, like, at least we do this really well every week. So I think it's like, I think everything on the table is pretty clear. It's like, we need to make changes across the board to get this thing figured out, because the sloppiness that they play in week out, it's pretty alarming.
Nathan, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty willing so far to, we talked about this, I think, last week, right? With, or maybe it was post game, anyways, Job, with Haynes being inactive, with some of these things, it seems like they are definitely willing to make changes with playing time. And so, you know, obviously JSN had a huge game. If DK is coming back, does that mean Tyler Lockett is like, what is his role on this team for the rest of the year? We talked after the game about it's Cody White, right? I gave people crap. I couldn't remember his last name for a second. Okay, got it. Nailed it. White and Bobo is obviously one. Mm-hmm. He had more interesting comments about Haynes. And the other one too is AJ Barner and Noah Fant. Like, maybe there's a shift there too.
Can somebody tell AJ Barner he's not required to leave his feet on every play that he's involved in?
Nobody tell AJ Barner that, please. Don't tell him.
Like, has that ever really accomplished anything beneficial for him?
There was the one last game where he went like super high in the air, and I think the Rams had four chances on the way down to whack the ball out. And it was right after the blocked punt, and I'm like, "Do not fumble this ball!" And it's like
let me give you, let me take away all my leverage. As it's like people that slide to get to the base at first base, as opposed to just running through, and like every single physics evaluation will tell you the fastest way to get to first base is to not stop running. And then there's people that will like, it's close play, I'm gonna dive for it. And like, no, like, keep your feet on the ground, dude. You are not DK Metcalf. You are not like Jimmy Graham or one of these like super elite athletic guys that can leap over everybody. Just freaking plow through them. That's your identity. Please find it.
There's a non-zero chance he tries the Saquon reverse hurdle before the end of the season. I will be here for it. It'll be incredible.
It will be entertaining.
He'll somehow land on his head,
So Nathan, you were saying you think that there's going to be some personnel things around the edges, like Cody White, Jake Bobo, like, you know, that kind of stuff.
I would think that's what it means, because, you know, the other thing is like, obviously you could think about scheme stuff, but they, at least on defense, really did some different stuff already in that Rams game. Like they already have changed stuff with how they're lining up. So, you know, to make an emphasis of it going into the bye week, I'm sure there will be scheme stuff. It'll be, you know, interesting to see what that means on the offensive side of the ball. But it really does feel like it's more personnel stuff that they're probably looking at right now.
What would be the most nuclear version of that? Like the holy crap, he really meant everything was on the table.
Gino.
That's the most nuclear version, right?
Oh, it's not. I don't think it's the close second.
Do you think that there's any chance that's on the table?
I mean, he was pretty clear about them having trust in Gino, right? Mm-hmm. It would be strange to have such a strong comment about it and then to change it up, but. You know, you've got 2 weeks of practice. Maybe you give Sam some extra reps and just kind of, even if you're not really serious about it, you just kind of make a point of it to the team. Like, it's not good enough. Like, you can't throw those interceptions. And, like, does he lose his job? I'd be absolutely shocked. But maybe there's some kind of a message sent that way.
Let me throw out a more plausible but still highly unlikely one. Maybe it's not highly – more plausible. I'll just leave it at that. Does Kenny McIntosh start getting some reps in place of Zach Charbonnet?
Maybe. I wouldn't mind.
Personally, as someone who's been a Zach Charbonnet supporter, I think Kenny McIntosh would be a more interesting player to have out there. He has other things that he does not do as well as Zach Charbonnet, but every time Zach Charbonnet is in the game and he gets a carry, it feels like, here's a way to get negative 20 to 30% of what this play should get. Like, not that he's going to get negative yardage on every play, but he is not a guy that's maximizing his touches.
No, we were joking on our me and Josh were texting the other day that we were calling him like the drive, like vibe killer. Like every time he comes in, it just feels like all the energy gets sucked. And there was a play like Walker came off because his shoe came off. And I was like texting like, what are they doing? And Josh, like his shoe came off, and that's and it was just like, I don't know, it's like something with the vibes of him. Like, yeah, I thought he would compliment Walker initially really well. I thought that the draft pick was way out of line, but when he comes into the game, it's just like he has no juice to him. Like, it feels like every play, whether it's a pass or a catch, feels like a 1 yard play, and the stats will probably say I'm wrong about that, but it just feels like every time they're like driving down the field, they're approaching like the borderline of field goal range. Charbonnet comes in and the drive just stalls.
Why doesn't he hit anybody anymore? He doesn't finish runs anymore.
No. And that brings no power.
Right. And that was the cool thing about him. Like, that was he has laid some hits out in the past. And now it just feels like he's an average athlete with with no push or no physicality. It's really strange.
Yeah, like the thing that I like about a physical back or a physical player in general is that can be a every week thing. You don't like someone who is an elusive runner. There's going to be some places where that's just you're not going to be able to elude the tackle. But physicality, like that's something you can bring every single play and every single week. And when I see him hit right now, it's almost like his feet just start spinning. Like there's no drive through contact. Now, the numbers will tell us something different. In fact, I'll pull this up because we might as well look at what actual numbers say for yards after contact. Let's take a quick look. What do you guys guess as I look this up? What are your guesses about what his yards after contact per attempt look like? Where does he rank? Is he in the top half of the league, bottom half? Where do you think?
I think he is like maybe top 20 or something like that, because I've seen these stats with the Seahawks backs and, they're both Walker's always higher, I think, but, they're
not for yards after contact.
Oh, okay. Broken tackles.
Then. Walker's broken and eluded tackles. Walker's above him.
Gotcha.
But Charbonnet is at 3.1 yards after contact per attempt, which ranks 22nd in the NFL, right around like Devin Singletary, Tajay Spears, Najee Harris, like that kind of group.
That's surprising.
Right? It does not feel that way.
Is that like a 3 yards a carry would have you higher than that? or 3 yards after contact would have you higher than that.
Well, so there's a bunch of guys kind of grouped in, but the top is Tank Bigsby. He's 4.4. Jeremy Nichols of Washington is 3.97. Tyler Algier, 3.96. So he's down here at 3.11. So he's like a yard below those guys. But like the bottom of the list, if you know, you're talking about like Donta Foreman of Cleveland is 1.96 and Roshan Johnson is 2.17. But he just doesn't do it for me. I think Kenny McIntosh would be an interesting like potential, like does he give you more than Zach Charbonnet? I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's likely. I don't think it's probably going to happen. If I told you guys, if I asked you guys, did Jake Bobo, how many snaps did Jake Bobo play? What percentage of snaps did Jake Bobo play in this last game? And was it more or less than Cody White? What would you say?
I was thinking about this. I think he probably outsnapped Cody White. Did he play like 40-50% of the snaps?
Okay. Jeff, do you have a feel?
I was going to guess that he outsnapped him. I only remember White showing up in the second half. So I would guess it was like, 30% of the snaps Bobo played.
Yeah, I would have had White outsnapping him, but it was just probably because of the plays that he was in was more memorable to me. Bobo played 53% of the snaps. He had 42 snaps overall. Cody White had 35. So they're pretty close, but he did outsnap him. And that was actually, I would, in my mind, it was White getting snaps at the cost of Jake Bobo. That was the most snaps Jake Bobo had in a game all year. It's kind of interesting in that regard. It is like the first game without DK Metcalf, Bobo played 76% of the snaps and then he went down to 53. So it did kind of come at his expense, but not as much as maybe I thought. Laviska Shenault, I'm like, oh, maybe he's a guy that starts like not getting snaps. Well, Laviska Shenault has not gotten more than 9 snaps in any game yet this year. So like, there's no snaps to be taken there. I do wonder, like, another place I wonder about tight end is like Farrell Brown helping.
No.
Like, should Brady Russell be getting more snaps, or should they be running more I like seeing an I formation. Like, I was like, I literally said it out loud when Brady Russell came in. Like, when's the last time we saw an I formation? I was like, I want to see more of that. I don't even know Brady Russell. Like, K-9 does not know how to run behind a fullback. Brady Russell ran through this hole and K-9's like, screw that, dude. I'm going over here. But I wonder if that's a change that maybe we might see a little bit more of.
Oh no. Like, we just talked about the backup running back, the fourth string receiver, the third tight end. When he says everything's on the table, I don't know if that's...
Well, so let's talk about the big ones, like the big realistic potential ones. I tweeted about it yesterday. I talked to you. I think I said to you guys, and I also talked about this morning with Ray Roberts. Do they look at making like a move at center and guard? Do you try to solve the snapping problem and improve your right guard in essentially the same move? Moving Connor Williams back to guard, which he's played before, getting Anthony Bradford out of the lineup and putting either Jalen Sundell or Oluwatimi in there at center. And then you get Abe Lucas back. And this is a classic fan based thing. But for me, like Ray and I went back and forth on this morning. He's like, that's a lot of change. And you don't know, it could be way worse. Guys, I'm like, really? Could it be way worse? Like, do you think that there's a chance that Anthony Bradford's going to get better? Like, do either of you feel like he just needs a little bit more time and then he's going to click? It doesn't feel like that situation, does it?
No.
So, like, what do we have to lose?
That's where I'm at. When you said that, I'm like, my big takeaway, like, after just kind of, I was so mad on Sunday. I kind of wish I was on with you guys. I was so mad. But the more I've kind of just become more sad than anything else, just because of, I think I put out a tweet yesterday. Like, I just can't believe how bad this offensive line is. Like, we've seen so many bad offensive lines, and we've had the same conversation every draft, every offseason. And I think field goals kind of dunked on me. But I think this is the worst one in 10 years. They said the pre-Dwayne Brown 2017 one was way worse, they said. But between the snaps over the head, Anthony Bradford, I can't remember watching anything that bad. And then their inability to block fourth and one.
The penalties.
And someone sent me the stat, like, these coaches suck because that Ben Solak stat. I'm like, the coaches? That was an offensive line stat. Like, what? And it was like, so the book on Connor Williams was he had snapping problems in Miami. So this is not a new thing. It's been comical how bad it's been. Like, even the last one's the one, there's how many times did Geno have to, like, go like this, like a second baseman grabbing a ball to just catch it? So I'd be open to it with Timmy. But I'd rather just see Sundell play. Just, I don't know what he is. And then, yeah, anything that takes Anthony Bradford off the field right now is a win for me. I don't want to watch him play anymore. Between pass blocking, run blocking, he's so painful to watch. Penalties. There's that one clip where he's standing in the complete wrong place with the whole offensive line. Have you guys seen that? Mm-hmm. The whole offensive line's on one side and he's standing on the complete other side just blocking no one. I think
I want to see that.
It's really
please, please
bad.
Make sure you send that to me.
Yeah. So I don't ultimately, like, no, it probably doesn't make that big of a difference. And Ray's probably right. But just from, like, my pain, I can't watch this offensive line for 8 more games.
I'm pretty skeptical that it solves anything, that it makes a big difference. I think if you're looking at putting Sundell or Olotimi out there, then I don't know what you seem to be swapping one black hole for another. I mean, maybe one of those guys surprises. How depressing is it, though, that they drafted 2 guards in this draft, and we're like, how do we get Jalen Sundell on the field? Like, that, how it's insane that these guys, like, I mean, that Haynes can't even be active on game day. That's, and maybe there's something disciplinary there, or there's more to the story, but
it's just flexibility, positional flexibility. Sundell and Olotimi can play multiple positions, and Haynes can only play guard.
The comments from McDonald saying, like, well, if someone steps back, that was pretty depressing. You know, Brock and Salk seem like Haynes is just getting worse in practice. And if he can't beat this dude out on the field, like,
oof. Brutal.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a miss right now. I'm not out on Christian Haynes. Like, he was never the guy that I wanted, Jeff. Like, you know, through all the draft, and Nathan, you too. Like, I was, this is not the guy I wanted. But I also, a lot of people were very high on him, and I think there's reason to see that. Give him a full offseason. Derek Hall at this time last year, we were like, this is a massive bust. I don't think any of us feel that way now. So I think there's absolutely still reason to be hopeful that Haynes can turn this around. Anthony Bradford's in his second season. He did not have one of those, oh, I'm a professional, now I'm going to go into my offseason and totally come back a different player. He did not do that. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that there are rumors he was pushing 400 pounds at times last year, struggled with his weight. I don't know how many of those things are true, but he doesn't look like a different athlete than physical specimen than he was a year ago. And so on one hand, that does leave the chance that light will go on. And maybe this next offseason, he will realize he can't just get by on what he's gotten by before. But it's not a good look. And he's now potentially, I won't say wasted, but 2 years of his career are pretty bad. What were we going to say?
Oh, I'm just, the problem with this whole thing is, like, Haynes was a 5-year starter at UConn. And the thing with him is it was supposed to be a very natural transition. And then there's kind of a weird, he's not playing much at the first team. And then, but the whole thing was he was supposed to be like the ready-made. And, like, the guys who really know offensive line, like, and some of the guys who really know, the Nate Tices and even, like, Danny Kelly, were like, the very least, he's just, like, a stable dude. Like, he might not have, like, the ceiling, and that's why I kind of liked him. I'm like, this line just needs someone stable. And he's been just – and then all these guys go after him, and they're playing well. It's like, how much more of this can we take? Like, if I'm running the team right now, I'm sitting down. If Schneider's still the GM, and it's like, I need a solution to this. Like, Dominic Pooney going right after them again. It's like, I can't take this anymore.
Well, I kind of see – go ahead.
Who's the guy that was starting for the Rams? They had a rookie guard starting. I don't know that he's especially good, but I didn't notice him just ruining plays the way that Bradford does. Like, at this, I don't know if we want to get too off track here. Like, I'm not sad about the Byron Murphy pick at all, but it's not fun looking at the Rams draft and comparing it with the Seahawks draft right again. Now.
I mean, this was why I had a little bit of concern about Christian Haynes. For me, I just didn't think he was had quite the same ceiling. And that's part of why I was excited about Anthony Bradford in the fourth round the year prior, because I thought he had a very high ceiling. Like, athletically, he was very rare as a guard. There's other things that he hasn't done. Dominic Pooney, for me, I thought was, like, when you have a guy that's a tackle who's a good athlete, and you then have a chance to move him inside to guard, you know his pass protection generally is going to be better. And he already was a pretty physical dude. That's why I was high on him. Like, and this isn't meant to, like, you know, we had the best draft takes. I mean, frankly, I think we did have pretty good draft takes. But I guess I'm pointing out John Schneider went high athleticism, high power 1 year, didn't work out. Next year he goes higher floor, doesn't look like it might work out. And I don't know, man, it is where we are. It's where we are. And so given where we are, I will say, like, Jalen Sundell is a guy I would have never thought had a chance to make the roster. All throughout camp, he did really well in 1v1s. In games, he did well. Not only did, like, he make practice squad, he made the roster, and then he leapfrogged Olu on the depth chart, and then he was, like, the backup right tackle option for a couple games. There's something interesting about that arc for what he, like, the athletic profile there is interesting to me. And I'm like, Olu, I've seen enough of already. In 1v1s alone or in practices alone, he's just not powerful enough. I don't think he can hold up. And if he's not holding up there, I've seen guys in practice that do hold up and then they still don't hold up in games. So I just don't see how Olu can do that. But maybe Sundell's, like, can he be a league average center and snap the ball properly? Like, if he can do that and Connor Williams can be even 20% better than Connor Williams. Sorry, Connor Williams can be 20% better than Anthony Bradford. And I think he can be more than 20% better. I think you got to do it. Like, you got to freaking do it. Because, like, sticking with what they got is not going to fix it. I just don't see how it's going to get better.
What happened to McClendon Curtis?
That's a good point. That's a great call. He's been on the practice squad. They've kept him at tackle, but I actually liked him at guard. He will probably be similar to Bradford from a pass protection perspective. I think he's a better run blocker, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
he does have really long arms.
It's, if everything's on the table, like,
it's a good call.
All of these guys, LaMea, like, Haynes should get another shot. We can move Williams over and mess around at set. Like, McClendon Curtis, like, I don't know. They should be throwing everything at that spot. I don't know what they're going to think is the highest, like, likelihood, but yeah, it's just weird that they have all of these guys and they just keep rolling Bradford out so far.
I see a lot of people saying, like, let's play Satawa, LaMea, and we don't get to watch practices once the season starts. He would have had to make a massive leap to be a more interesting possibility than Christian Haynes or even Bradford or Curtis. Like, he from a physical profile perspective, he's just a smaller guy. He's just not that big. And if they're worried about Haynes being powerful enough, I think he's more powerful than LaMea. So maybe it's happened, but I'm just not sure. Like, I saw him as just a developmental player for a year that they didn't want to let go of, but who knows? I think the Curtis thing's an interesting idea. He was the starting guard in OTAs until the Abe Lucas news came out and they realized they were going to have more depth to tackle. But that feels like the place that they've got it. I mean, how they can't be less aware of this issue than we are. Right?
I really hope not.
I mean, it's their jobs and it's all the players. They have to be seeing this and saying, like, so let's say if it's not personnel, what are the other things that could be on the table? Keeping more guys in to protect, changing the, like, the depth of targets, more quick game, more eye formation or other, like, play action. Like, play action could be a big one. They are one of the least play action oriented teams in the league. You know, are any of those things, like, items you think might come up?
Well, they've been in shotgun so much.
They have.
And, like, they've been, Tom Brady was pretty critical of them. I heard Mark Schlereth critical, same thing. So Brian Grubb is kind of collegey in some of the stuff he does. And I think that could be an area he's talking about where they have to be a little more under center play action. That third and one call, like the way they lined up and the end of the game, like that was really stupid. They invited all the players to go into the box and I don't want to hyper focus on one play, but they got to be a lot smarter on how they're doing things. And they've done some things really well offensively, but I think they could make adjustments based on like some of the packages they're coming out of, how much they're sitting in shotgun, how much that puts, if you have an offensive line that can't pass block, being in shotgun all the time is passing 70 times a game or 70% is makes things harder on that group. So I think that's because they made, it seemed like they made the right adjustments on defense last week. That's one of the reasons I was so angry last game, because they wasted that performance, which was really meaningful. And offensively, that line was so bad, it kind of usurped the entire game. And I think that's definitely an area they could be talking about, Brian.
All right, we're going to play a little game.
Okay.
Each of you get to say, you can change one thing about the team, the way that it's playing. And I mean, like, I would want more edge pressure or more pass rush. I want them to be more explosive, whatever. You get to pick one thing that you could change about this team. And then what is the one thing you would do for to potentially make that possible, to make that more likely? All right. So I'll give you a chance to think about it. For me, I'll take the simple one. For me, it is make the offensive line less error prone and 10% better at pass blocking and run blocking. And the thing that I would do for that to be possible is to make these lineup changes that I'm talking about. I would do that, and I'd do it right now. And yeah, I think that would be, if I was to pick one thing, it would be that chain of events. What about you guys? Nathan, you have something on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think not super specific, but like they seem to find ways to push the ball downfield more with JSN last week. And I mean, Lockett had a longer touchdown, but that seemed more a product of the hard count that they were doing. And so I just, you know, how do they keep that going forward? Because like you said, hey, should they do more quick game? And like, you know, DK is going to lose his mind if they're not running past the sticks. We know that. So like, and getting DK back is obviously a big part of finding ways that you push the ball down the field. But I think that they need to find ways to be more explosive and pass downfield more. And maybe they figured a little bit of that out with what they were able to do with JSN, and then you get DK back and you can do a lot more with it. But yeah, I think how they attack the downfield on offense is something I would like to see change.
Jeff?
I would like to see them change how they're approaching short yardage plays. I've been very frustrated with kind of like the, it's not like bullheaded, but it's like, it seems like Ryan Grubb's like, oh, I'm in the NFL now. I have to act like a standard NFL coordinator. And every time they're in like third and one, they just grab run in the box and run up the middle really quickly. And there's like zero creativeness, like zero understanding of your own team. I've been very like, even the first drive of the game last time, they're driving down the field while Walker's moving. They're moving the pocket, all kinds of things. They get to third and one. They just quickly rush to the line, run them up the middle. It goes nowhere and it's done. And it's like, we all saw that Rome Odunze play in the Apple Cup and things like that. I'm not saying you need to pull that play with Chanel or things like that, but every time it feels like they're in short yardage. They're like, we need to do what the NFL teams do. And like the fact that they ran two plays leading on their offensive line to end the game was so stupid and so irritating and so unaware of how your team's weaknesses. I'm hoping they take the time and like, okay, we can't run these plays and make it that obvious what we're doing. We're not just like, we're going to tough it out and power over you with our offensive line that can't block. Like, they got to change something right now, because every time they get into third and one, my thought is like, they're screwed, and that's horrible.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that's a really good call out, Jeff. Before we get to patron questions, I got one other question for you guys. What is one thing that has gone better than you expected it to go this year? It can be a player. It can be an aspect of the game. It can be a coaching piece. What's one thing that has gone better than you expected? And if you need some time, I can go first. You guys look like you're still thinking.
I can steal the easy one.
Go for it.
Derek Hall's been really good. You mentioned it earlier, like he's taken a massive leap forward. So just looking at one player that's been a lot better, he's been a huge surprise, or not a surprise, but like, you know, he's
better than expected.
Expectations. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Jeff?
For me, it'd be Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was someone who we talked about him being a surprise cut. We talked about him like kind of being like a man without a place. With some of the corner injuries, were like, maybe he's going to become the slot corner, and he hasn't really been good at that. And since he started playing safety once Jenkins went on IR, I thought he's looked like not only competent, but pretty solid. And there might have something there. And that was not something I even had in the cards. And so he makes that great like breakup to that the end of the game last week. Like that was – he took a step that I just didn't see coming based on his skill set. So that's definitely gone better than I would have guessed.
Yeah, I even think there's some question about whether Rayshon Jenkins will have his job back when he comes back, or at least if he will have different snap profile than he did when he was healthy. Mine that I'll put out there is I think like I feel like I'm a little bit in a twilight zone here. The passing game has been pretty darn impressive overall, especially considering all the stuff we just spent all this time talking about. No run game to speak of. Offensive line is as bad or worse than it was a year ago. And you throw in like DK injury for a couple of games. For them to be leading the NFL in passing yards, for DK and JSN to both be towards the top of the league in receivers of receiving yards, for Tyler Lockett and JSN and DK all to have like a number of targets and receptions, that's gone. Like, I think better than I just keep thinking like, if that was any other year and there was anything else like with it, we'd be like, holy crap. Like this is great. But I think there's been so many mistakes and so many other things where like, they got 370 yards passing, but they threw three interceptions and they got sacked seven times and who cares? It's like the Lions game was like that. You know, Geno could have gone for 400 yards. Like the Patriots game was such a beautiful game, but they still was like ugly in a lot of ways. So like there's a lot of these games where like it's a pretty freaking impressive performance, but. And so that's where, I think that's not getting the appreciation I think it deserves. All right, Nathan, you ready for patron questions?
Yep.
All right, folks, you can go to patreon.com/hawkblogger to sign up, get access to the Slack channel where you get to ask us questions every week, just like Nathan's about to do right now.
Yeah, so Jeff, Zach Hassan wants to know, what do you think is the biggest factor in building a good to elite offensive line? Is it the draft, free agency, luck? Is there some other aspect that's critical for building a top 10, let's say, or top 15 offensive line?
Certainly luck is involved for sure, but I think the biggest thing we see with sustainable groups is you have to have a commitment to it, not just in the draft but in free agency as well. It can't just be basement bottom of the barrel like the Seahawks have done for 10 years. A lot of the teams that have had success have dipped into veteran free agency and done very well there. Mm-hmm. I think number two, you can't have a glaring weakness. I've heard personnel people say before, you're better off having five pretty okay guys than one Hall of Famer and four weak guys. You have to be stable across the board. We've seen it happen so many times with Seahawks centers, or now with what Anthony Bradford's doing, or when sometimes they have a lot of weaknesses right now. But a lot of the best lines in the league, like, can be these no-name groups that they all play together. And the third one is cohesion. It's a position where you have to know who's playing beside you. You have to have year-over-year continuity. And the Seahawks every year are changing 2 to 3 starters. And the reason they're doing that is because their players aren't good enough. But so many of these lines that have played together and like that group we all remember from 05 and 04 and 03, it was a lot of the same guys year after year after year. So like the Eagles have been like, they lost Jason Kelce and they're still pretty good up front. And like, it's a lot of the same guys. The Chiefs have had this group together in left guard, center, right guard, same three guys for a number of years. So it takes a number of things, but fortunately, Schneider and his team, they're doing none of them well.
Yeah. Brian, a different Zach has a question for you. In your conversation with Big Ray this morning, he said that Geno has to be Geno in the red zone. It seems to me that if Geno is Geno, he's flat out a quarterback that's going to be out of the league soon. He has to change and have a different risk level in the red zone, or this isn't going to work. Do you, and he wants to know your comments, do you agree with that, or what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys heard Ray kind of tried to dunk on me a little this morning because I was like, I think Geno needs to be more situationally aware and not even let it get to a point where a player can get close enough to him in that situation to hit his elbow. Like, he has to have gotten rid of the ball by that point and just not make it close. And he's like, I think Ray's words were like, that sounds like someone who's never played the game before. Like, you can't just like not give it your all every single play and try to get every single thing out of every single play. I respect Ray. He played the game. He had it's a fair perspective to have. I just disagree. And I think that if you talk to coaches and you talk to players and quarterbacks and you say, does your risk tolerance have to be different when it's first and goal at the 6 yard line than when it's first and, you know, 10 at the 40, I think every single one of them will say yes. And yes, every single one of them will say, yeah, I should throw the ball away before pressure gets to me. Like, I shouldn't make it close. You have seen quarterbacks go years between red zone interceptions. Like, that's not unheard of for quarterbacks to be that careful. Russ did it for sure. So I think it's a positive thing to say, Geno doesn't need to change the way he's being aggressive throughout a game, but there should be these certain situations where he's like, okay, wait a second. This is not the moment to try to get every single thing out of this play. And I think those are the types of plays to do it. So, I do. I think it needs to change. I think Geno thinks it needs to change. I'm going to ask him about it next week. We'll see what he thinks, but this whole red zone thing, is this a, I don't know. Everyone seems to think it's this big issue with Geno. I think it's also the play caller. I've not seen a lot of open, easy, like we see these schemed touchdowns so often in other teams. I so rarely see that with the Seahawks. So I'd put a little shade towards Ryan Grubb on that.
I think that's fair. Jeff, Hawks fan Matt Mann wants to know, why does it seem like there's no third option on the ownership communication spectrum between the extremes of Jerry Jones and then just complete silence? Are there owners that kind of fall in the middle somewhere between like the Jerry Jones and Irsay side and just like, I mean, Paul and Jody Allen were very much pretty silent, right?
There are. You don't hear about them. The guy in Baltimore, Steve Bisciotti, he would be one of those guys. From what I heard, for example, he made a very strong push in them drafting Lamar Jackson. They drafted Hayden Hurst over Lamar Jackson. And from what I understand, the owner kind of pushed to kind of do that. So there are some teams. The guy in Philly, I think, is pretty good, Jeffrey Lurie. I think there is a pretty good middle ground. It's just you have to go team by team. You hear the most about the loudest ones, the Browns, the Panthers, the Jets, the Cowboys. And then there's sort of the absentee ones. like the Tennessee owner and the New Orleans owner and things like that. But there are a number I would put in that middle if I went team by team by team. And a lot of those teams are kind of the stable teams. That's why you just don't hear about some of those guys. And yeah, there's if you look at the teams at the bottom of the standings, all there's 7-2-7 teams right now. Seven. Every one of them has like laughably bad ownership. And it's the number one thing in sports people don't talk about.
Yeah, ownership is the most important thing in basically every league, I think. okay, last one then. Troy Fagan has one for all of us. Brian, I don't know if you want to walk us through this or if you had something planned here, but predict the Seahawks post-bye record.
Well, we did our predictions to start the year. Let's do a quick check on those. I had the Seahawks as 6-3 at this point in the year. Nathan, you had them at 6-3. Jeff, you had them at 5-4. I will say I had the right record up until week 7. And then I comic, like, remember, Jeff, those times where we thought Buffalo might not be that good this year. Like, they lost a lot of talent. That was a bad take.
That was.
So I kind of guessed the wrong there.
They should be 6-3.
They should be.
Like, the Giants game took like a level of just lack of preparation, and they still almost won the game.
The Rams game,
yeah. They should have won. That was so stupid. That series of events that took to lose that game. So I don't think you're that far off. Like, they could easily be 6-3 right now, but there's real problems there.
Yes. So for the rest of the year, I had them going, what would it be, 4-4 to end the season, to finish 10-7. I will go through mine, and then you guys – actually, let's go week by week. Let's do that real quick, all right? 49ers at San Francisco, 1 o'clock. Win or loss?
Loss.
Loss.
I'm going win.
Oh, we're all saying with our thing. Oh, no, Jeff, you had him winning, actually. So never mind.
Yeah, I feel bad about that.
Okay. Arizona at home.
Win.
I'm going to say win, too.
I'll say win, sure. New York Jets. At New York Jets, 10 a.m. game.
I'll go win. I think they can. My kind of prediction here is that they continue to look better against San Francisco, but can't get over the hump. And then they get some wins here. They right the ship. So I think they can beat the Jets.
Okay, Jeff.
I hate myself, but I'm going to say loss.
I'll say loss too. All right. To be ugly. At Arizona, Sunday game.
Loss.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go loss. So I've got them 2-2 at this point. Where are you guys at? Have you been keeping track?
2-2.
1-3.
1-3. Okay.
Oh no.
Home against Green Bay on a Sunday night.
loss.
Home against Minnesota.
Loss.
Loss. Our O-line against Flores.
I'm going to go win. God. I'm going to go win in that one. At the Bears, Thursday night game.
Win.
Win.
I'm going to go loss. And then final game at Los Angeles.
Go loss again.
Win.
Actually, yeah, win. No, I want that back. I'll go win.
I think win. So for me, that would then be 2-2. So yeah, I end up at the same place. I end up at 4-4. But since they're now 4-5, that would be an 8-9 record. Would be where I'd end up.
Yep, that's same for me.
Yeah. Is that where you are, Jeff? Are you worse than that?
I won worse. I was one worse. I was 7-10.
7-10. Okay. Well, that's depressing. What is it? if win loss is like probably not the thing that's going to be able to, I mean, maybe it will be the thing that makes us feel good this year, but outside of wins and losses, give me the top one or two things that would make you guys feel like, all right, at least this year we did something that I can consider foundational to build for next year.
They could crater. They could end up with a top five pick.
That would make you feel better.
Maybe it'd give it, it would make things more clear, I guess. Make things a little simpler.
For me, it's building off what we saw last week defensively. They seem to really sharpen up a lot of the stuff we talked about last week with how they were lining up and some of their issues. And the thing that was really encouraging to me is that, like, Witherspoon had his best game of the year. I thought Byron Murphy looked pretty good. Ernest Jones, I thought, looked really good. And it wasn't just that, like, they had a good defensive game. I thought that they matched wits with Sean McVay. So if they come in and they play good defense against, like, some of those teams are pretty good. Green Bay, Minnesota, San Francisco. Like, if they seem to have, because I feel like linebacker was just like the one area of the team that like didn't seem fixable before. And so if they can come out and like, not only are like they playing pretty well, they're creating pressure, they're playing good against the run, and we see this like run of defense, I think that could be sort of like the 7-9 second year of the Seahawks with Pete Carroll, like kind of thing. But I just like the offensive line's not fixable, I don't think. Or like you can band-aid it together a little bit, but that usurps basically everything on offense they could kind of really grow in. And I think that, and then I think McDonald kind of, I want to see a more disciplined team coming out. They've just been completely out of control.
Mine are pretty easy, guys. Like, I want to see something resembling the defense we saw against the Rams for as many games as possible. I don't think it's necessarily a fair thing to say have 7-3 and outs every week against great offenses and the best minds of on the offensive side. Like, I don't think that's realistic. It's wild to me that the Seahawks defense leads the NFL in 3 and outs forced. Like, that's crazy. But I think it is absolutely critical that a Mike McDonald led team is showing that they are making real inroads on the defensive side of the ball. Like, otherwise, why the hell did you hire the guy? Like, he has to be giving you an advantage on that side of the ball, or this just will never work out. So that's number one. Number two, Abe Lucas. I think, like, if everything else falls apart, if at the end of this year you look and you're like, actually, we've got a good pair of tackles, even if the rest of the line still sucks, that would be massively important foundationally for building the roster. I see you guys smirking. Say what's on your minds.
He can play every snap the rest of the season, and I will still have butterflies in my stomach about depending on him next year to start at right tackle. Like, so yeah, it's just hard. It's just going to take a long time for me to trust Abe Lucas again.
Yeah, he's almost like a mythical creature at this point. Like, every time you hear his name, it's like maybe he's going to play next week. All of a sudden, like, the coaches start pouring cold water on it again. It's like, oh, he only practiced 2 days this week. And it's like, oh, my God.
I find this whole storyline very odd because it's not like he's had a bunch of injuries. He had one surgery, and the recovery time has been longer than the coaches expected, but not longer than Abe Lucas expected. So, and we still don't know exactly what that was. So the fact that there was like a mismatch of when he was expected to come back, I guess, has contributed to this whole thing, and the mystery around it, and the fact that nobody will say exactly what the injury was. I think that's contributed to all of it. But if you really like back all the way out and you're like, one injury, one surgery, I'm not sure I see why this is such a.
I thought he had a problem with the knee and then like was playing through it or something.
Yeah,
Yeah. Well, he got hurt in the first game of the year last year.
But Pete call it like chronic or what was the word?
Then we got Brady Henderson as sources as multiple and said it's not chronic, that's not the case.
I know, but I think hearing that, seeing he had knee issues, I think there were some issues when he came into the draft of why he ended up in the third round. And then into this, it's like, oh, there's a lot of smoke where there's fire there, you know?
Also, yeah. What is it? Like, yeah. What is wrong with him?
No one will say. I've heard from different folks what I think I know to be the issue, but I'm not going to say it because it's not for me to say. That's not what I do. I'm not a reporter that way, and I'm not going to deal in like.
I think that's the thing that makes it hard, right? Is just no idea what it even is. It's just a total mystery.
Yeah, for sure. I guess, you know, I think we're going to find out at some point. I don't think it'll stay secret forever. And I guess what I'm looking at is I think he tried to come back last year without getting surgery and it didn't work. And then he got surgery in the off season and now he's coming back from that. And so to me, it's pretty straightforward. Whether or not he's the same player after the surgery, that is an open question. And so that's why to me, if he comes back and he looks like a good player at right tackle, I think that's huge. I think that would be huge. And I think that would change the roster complexion in a way that would be bigger than almost anything else.
What is it? Manti Te'o? Is that what Josh is?
Yeah. We'll see. I hope I'm right and I get to dunk on all of you. Because if I'm wrong, nobody really wins. Just so you know, there's no pleasure in being right about Abe Lucas being a catfish. All right. Well, anything else that's on your guys' mind? Anything from the trade deadline? Anything from otherwise from the game this past week or anything else that you wanted to bring up relative to the Seahawks?
How real do you think that JSN game was? Like how, like what about that? What he did was repeatable. Like even me, like Mr. Like JSN was my favorite guy in the draft. Like that was like, he was the best player.
People need to know how pissed Jeff was about this game, with a large part of it being because JSN had this great game and they screwed it up for him. I think that was so funny.
That was like my moment. Like they beat the Rams, like McDonald hits. JSN is the best player on the field, like, and they waste it because, oh my God, I was beside myself. And what the hell is Tariq Woolen doing waiting for that interception to come? Mm. I'm still mad about that. And then I have like, I see Peter Schrager on Twitter is like, look at this amazing throw for Matthew Stafford where he moves the ball in the air. I'm like, the guy was standing there like this for five. What is going on? Like, show some fire, dude. Like,
I'll answer your question about JSN, but I will say the Rams love that's coming out of that game to me is a little bizarre.
It's insane.
The one part of their team that was like really impressive was the pass rush, like the rookie, like that was legitimately impressive. You know how many freaking coverage busts there were in that game? Like massive coverage busts, and then plays that were called back. Geno should have had like 500 yards. People talk about JSN should have 250 yards receiving. Geno should have had 450 yards passing. Like, and the offense was completely bottled up the whole game. They were like 7-3 and outs. They couldn't run. Like, and everyone's like, oh, the Rams are back. Screw off. Like, what? Like, whatever. Good for you.
Oh, that's been driving me crazy. I saw Dan Orlovsky say, I think they're going to win the Super. They can win the Super Bowl if they're healthy. They should have lost to the Seahawks by 10 points.
I think Arizona is a more interesting team than the Rams right now.
I know. I said I thought the Rams would win the division, and then I watched them last week, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, you're sorry.
Nathan, answer Jeff's question. What do you think about the JSN game? How sustainable, repeatable is it?
I think it's pretty – it should be – I mean, he's not going to go off like that every week, obviously. No. But, yeah, I think it's repeatable. I mean, the Rams don't have the best secondary in the world, but they obviously gave a ton of problems in the pass rush, and they were still able to create some stuff. I still think he's one of the funnest players to watch with the ball in his hands. So, like, they find ways to get him in space and stuff. So, we'll see. I mean, he's been a little up and down, obviously, but I don't know what I saw there that didn't look repeatable.
Yeah, I'm looking at his targets by game. And, you know, he had a 16-target game against the Patriots early, and then he had a 12-target game against the Lions. But generally, he's been like a 7 to 9 target a game guy. And so I think that's probably what he's going to sit at. He had 13 targets against the Rams. So I think there's a limit to what you're going to get. With 7 targets is not nothing, but DK Metcalf should be the one getting 10 targets a game, at least. Like, I still believe that to be the case. But I don't see any reason why there can't be more games like that Patriots game where they both went over 100 yards. And I feel like this was a game that's going to lead Geno to call his number more often in the progressions. And then that will force defenses to potentially cover them differently over time. So I'm excited about it. Like, I'm excited to watch DK come back. There's something a little bit freeing about the fact that the rest of the, like, they've kind of just blown it. So now it's just like, can we get some stuff to be excited about and just stop being like absolute dumpster fire? Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, unfortunately for the Seahawks fans, like, we've seen so few like the blue chip style performances. Like, we all talk about that Clowney game and such lore, and there's so many Russ games, and like, I don't know if JSN's a blue chip player, but that was like a blue chip performance. He got like the 90 grade from PFF, and like, he was the dominant player. Like, Jared Verse was kind of like that on the other side, but like, we don't get to see those much. So like, here's hoping we have more of those kind of performances where the guy just looks like an all pro kind of guy, and it's just like, whew, I don't know if it's coming, but like, do we need to talk about like that Adam Schefter tweet about DK, or do you think that was?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, if you guys have a few moments, but like, did you think that was weird?
Yes.
Like, he could have said that about like any of the hundreds of players in the NFL. And he's like, DK Metcalf is not going to be traded. Okay. Like, there weren't a lot of rumors flying around about that in the press.
I think it later came out that teams have been calling and asking, right? But supposedly the Seahawks weren't interested. It's a weird thing for him to decide to say, though. Like, yeah.
Who wanted him to say that?
Yeah. Probably
John. That agent?
I don't know. It was weird because, like, the only one who has these conversations are, like, Mike Salk fighting with fans online. It's not like it's not like anyone's having this conversation. Like, maybe we've talked about it, or like, Evan's been mad at DK or something like that. But like, it's not like a national conversation where it's like, well, is he going to be back? Like, no one talks about it. All of a sudden that tweet comes out. I'm like, that seems like a plant.
So that's always when those kind of weird ones come out, I'm like, who wants this story out there? Who would benefit the most from it? DK's camp, it doesn't make a ton of sense unless he's trying to, you know, raise his profile as a player that's coming into his free agent year and, you know, whatever. But what makes more sense to me, if anything, is John Schneider. Mm-hmm. He's like, we're not trading him yet. Like, that's the only thing that makes a little bit of sense to me, that he's kind of announcing to the league that come the off season, this is a name that wasn't traded before, but maybe he would entertain before his final year of his contract.
That, or maybe he had some conversations and DK caught wind of it, and so he wanted to get it out there that, like, no, we're not doing this. Right. And it could be something that was very innocent where it really was just teams calling him, or maybe there was more to it, but yeah, maybe he's trying to placate or kind of calm things down with DK.
Yeah. I mean, I'd heard like fan based chatter about, is there any chance they're keeping him out of these games so that they can trade him? And there's no way Adam Schefter is responding to fan generated rumors. Like, I hadn't seen any reports or anything coming out. So it was weird. I think it was weird. There was one other thing I was going to ask you guys, which was, we were just kind of going through the things that would be like most valuable if they happened, or more and most interesting. Are there a couple other guys that you're like, I actually feel like they could do something in the second half of the season that would be really important, even if the whole group doesn't? Like, for me, like Byron Murphy, mm-hmm. if he has even one blue chip game where he just starts ripping people apart, that'd be really great to see, right? Derek Hall, Boye Mafe, continue. Like, there's some of these guys where if you could just see a little bit more. Anyone that's like in that category for you guys?
Be really fun to see Witherspoon be a big playmaker again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, to get some of that back would be really cool.
Yeah, like, you have to like really dig into like the film. Like, I haven't, I don't want to rewatch that game, but I've seen some clips of just like some of the really cool stuff he did in like run fits last week. Again, this is a top five pick. If you have to like, Brian, you always say, if you have to like dive deep to see how good someone is, they're not that good. But yeah, I think that's a great answer. I think you guys hit the two big ones. Those are the guys we want to see all year. Are they blue chippers?
Because I think Ernest Jones is probably on that list, right?
Yeah. He looked really good last game.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited about the notion that you might enter next year with Ernest Jones and Tyrese Knight as your starting linebackers? Like 25 and 23-year-old, whatever they'd be. Like, is that a appealing idea?
Conceptually, sure. I think I need to see more from Knight before I get too excited about it. But Jones alone, I mean, like, if he can close the year out strong and they can get him on a long-term deal, something reasonable, like, that would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Because then you have, a really good foundation of young players with Reek and Spoon and Murphy and Hall and Mafe and Jones. And then you've got, Leonard's not a young guy, but he's super high quality and will be here for a little while. Like, you start to look at the defense and it's like, well, it's about there. It's about ready to be a big time defense. So that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only other thing I'd throw out there, which is probably obvious, but I mean, if Geno could just, push the touchdowns up and the interceptions down and everything else is the same. Like, I think he's having, like, in a lot of ways, he's having like a remarkable year. He's making some of the best throws of his career and some of the best throws in the NFL. I could show you 10 throws in that Rams game that were elite quarterback plays. I can show you two that were unacceptable, inexcusable game losing plays. Unfortunately, from the NFL, like, a 10-2 ratio is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. Like, and an 11-10 touchdown to interception ratio is not acceptable. So, until the end of days, I will be in Geno's corner and I will be like hoping that he's able to make the changes necessary and the people around him are able to make the changes necessary, that he can be the player that I still think he's capable of being. So I don't think it's a physical thing.
No, there's one other actually. And I think if the start of the year, I think everyone was gung ho about giving Charles Cross a second contract.
Mm-hmm.
Do we still feel that way about him? Has he slipped back into kind of that Charles Cross mediocrity? He hasn't been bad again by any stretch, but he hasn't felt like that dominant player the first couple of weeks. And maybe, like, I have honestly not paid much attention to him. There's been other stuff on the offensive line that's been way more interesting to me. Yeah. So maybe I'm just missing it and he's just getting overshadowed by some of the other ineptitude. But coming out of this year feeling good about giving him a big second contract would be very nice.
Well, Jeff, how about you? What's your answer to that?
In terms of the Cross or other things that Cross. I'm looking at, I think he's been good, not great. I still think he's like struggles to like anchor some like the good power rushers, like some of the really bull rushes. But like the problem is if you don't sign him, like then you have five holes, and it's the hardest negotiation they have coming up. It's going to be that one, because where do you go from there if you don't have that guy? So it's kind of like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't at times. But yeah, I think we're hoping for a little, but it's so hard to play offensive line when everything around you is falling apart. So it's such a hard evaluation to make, but he's kind of like a soft spoken dude. He's like, kind of fits with his play. He's kind of unassuming. He doesn't have a lot of like highlight reel stuff. I think he has kind of reverted into that guy where he's still fine, but he doesn't look special. And it's like, okay, what do you do with a player like that? Like, remember what happened when they lost Russell Okung? Like, it was a tire fire. So
I think it's very simple. I think he's an absolute must sign. I think, is he Walter Jones? No. Is he pushing Pro Bowl quality? I think yes. And I think the quality level of offensive lineman in the NFL, he is in the upper echelon. Whether or not that's the same that used to be upper echelon, that's debatable. But like, I think it's been hard to notice because everything else has been so bad. But, you know, everyone has their thing about PFF grades, and that's fine. I'll just say, as of right now, he is the fifth rated tackle in the NFL of all tackles. He is the highest graded tackle that's been drafted in the last 3 years. He is still just, let me double check this, 23 years old and still developing. So he made, like, what we said, or what I said was like, if he was just Russell Okung level, which was like a 76 kind of graded tackle, that was enough. Just get to that. He's in there at like 85. So I feel like
what's that trajectory look like? Because he was like 90s the first couple of weeks.
Yeah. So it's been actually pretty good. He has not had any more 95 games like he did in the first week's game. Was just a crazy good game. But his pass blocking's actually improved. His three of his best pass blocking grades of the year have come in the last five games. And his run blocking has been not as good, but he's had of his nine games, one, two, three, four of them are over 70 graded. So it's not fantastic, but not terrible. And just by comparison, like, from a run blocking perspective, let me just make sure I got this right. He is the fifth graded run blocking tackle in the NFL. So like still.
So Jordan Mailata, Andrew Thomas, Christian Darrisaw, they're making between $22 and $26 million a year. You're good with giving him a 5-year, $25 million a year deal?
I think you have to.
Yeah.
I think you have to, partially for the reason Jeff said as well. Like, he is, you can't have every single position that you're needing to go back and go fish and pull out another player.
But John's so good enough at that. He's so good at identifying offensive line talent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, guys. I'm holding out. I am a little bit curious just to see. This is the first time with Mike McDonald and this staff having a bye week. What do they do? I am curious about that. And I am curious, 2 weeks to prep for this 49ers game. I am curious to see Geno Smith, who has never played well against the 49ers, coming off a shit game. Like, I am curious about what's going to happen in this next game. Even though there's no reason to expect it to be great, I'm curious. I'll at least put it to that level. I don't think it's hopeless.
I would temper people's expectations. I always remember like Pete's very first year here when they had, you know, kind of a rough start. It was an up and down year that first year. And after one game, he was like, we're going to make some changes. Like, there was something, he wasn't happy. And then that was like the post game presser or something. And then on the Wednesday presser, they were like, hey, so you said you were going to make some changes. What's going on? And he's like, yeah, so I don't have like a college roster of 100 guys anymore. I kind of, he was very upfront about like, yeah, we went and actually looked at the backups, and yeah, they've been backups for a reason. So, so I wonder if Mike's like, yeah, we're going to tear it apart. Like, first year, my, you know, head coach, and he's going to get back there and he's like, Jalen Sundell. Oh, right.
Yeah. I think that's probably unlikely that he's going to do that. I don't think it's as unlikely that they'll make schematic and play calling changes. Like, that they'll be like, okay, we're going to toss this part of the playbook out. We're going to focus on this, that kind of thing. I could see them doing that.
Yeah, I think it very likely will look like them cementing some of the stuff that we saw against the Rams and really having a different structure to their defense, mixing in some different stuff that they weren't doing before that game and doing that the rest of the year.
All right, fellas. See, look, bye week, we still have more than an hour's worth of things to cover. That was fun. I actually enjoyed talking about anything other than other stuff going on right now. So appreciate your time tonight. That was Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons, Nathan Ernst at NathanE11, and I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at HawkBlogger. This has been episode 338 of Real Hawk Talk. Take care, y'all.
Hey, folks, this is Brian Nemhauser. Thanks for listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Want you to know that Real Hawk Talk is available on all major podcast platforms. Go ahead and subscribe. Have all podcasts delivered directly to your phone after each and every show. And then go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Helps us out, gets more people to the show. Then, if you haven't already done it, go to patreon.com/hawkblogger and subscribe for just $5 a month. Gets you immediate access to our Slack channel. Join hundreds of folks in that community to talk Seahawks about wins, losses, and all things in between. Not to mention, become eligible to win giveaways for Seahawks tickets and get to ask questions of the Real Hawk Talk crew every week on the show. Finally, if you haven't gone to hawkblogger.com recently, head on over. Tail the Tape morning after articles are there every week. Hoping to see you there. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show. Go Hawks.